Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 159 of the Citric Session. I'm your host, Andy Whiteside. That's right, guys, 159 of these so far, no end in sight. I'll just take this opportunity to thank Todd and Jeremy and Monica for helping Bill and I do this. This is something special we do. I don't think we're getting as many folks listening as we want, but there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people listening, which is good. And we're really excited to be adding, you know, the value the way we do. I've got Bill Sutton with us. Bill has a newer title. I don't know if we talked about this yet or not, but Bill is now the director of our modern workspace practice, our business unit, which means now Bill is responsible for all things Citrix, including endpoints and services and other related technology. Bill, how's it going?
It's going well, Andy.
I like the new background. I just found out we had a new background just the other day.
Yeah, I thought I'd try it out for this, so we'll see.
With us, we also have Todd Smith. Todd's been a loyal friend of Zintegra. He gets it, man. He just gets that Zintegra is here to add value in the Citrix space. Todd, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Are you in Canada or are you at home?
I'm home this week. Last week I was up in Ottawa, and next week I'm out in Vancouver.
Hmm. Are you getting like a lot of flight miles?
Yep. It's been interesting. Getting from Boston up to Ottawa's, you know, less than an hour flight type of thing. It's on a really, there's a kind of a hidden gem airline covering Canada called Porter Airlines. It's really interesting. It's a, they fly a lot of Dash 8s. So the turboprops, which is always a fun adventure.
I just can't imagine your big old body in a turboprop. That makes me scared.
It's a little bit of a challenge, but it's a short flight.
Do they make you sit in a certain part of the plane?
No.
Okay.
No. That was the old days where they used to have to like balance everything out and all that stuff. But the newer ones are not bad. And the thing about the Dash 8s though is that they can turn off both engines and still glide down to the ground effectively. So that's always nice to know.
Well, I hope I never have to find that out.
I would think that would be a little unsettling, but it's good to know that they can do that.
Yeah. Well, jets go.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Is it because of the weight of the jets?
Part of it is the thing that keeps the jets in the air is the thrust.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we picked a couple blogs here a minute ago to talk through, and I have lost them on my screen. Let me bring it back up here. We're going to talk about the Intel graphics blog, and I'm going to put Todd on the spot right fast here, right quick. The name of the blog, and it's from 6 days ago, is Unlocking New Possibilities with Intel GPUs in Citrix Environments. I don't think I've talked about this in forever in terms of a podcast, but I talk about it all the time with clients, and I'll set the conversation up by saying this. You know, every desktop, every PC, every laptop that you've owned in the last 20 years-ish has had a GPU in it. What makes people think they're going to put this into a virtual world and not give it some aspect of a GPU and rely on CPU only for the processing of the images is absolutely insane. I get with customers all the time. They immediately jump into like AutoCAD and all this 3D rendering stuff. And I'm like, that's great. But if you just want snappy experiences in Office apps and other apps, including browsers, you need some form of a GPU involved. Hey, Todd, before I get too far into this, the author of this one is who?
I believe it's Eljo. Eljo Van Gulik. Okay. He's one of our product managers, focused on obviously the graphics side. And, you know, it's been interesting that this topic keeps coming up because I'd almost want to say that they need to, the industry as a whole needs to eliminate the name graphics processing unit because you think of it as a gaming or a architecture AutoCAD type only solution. The biggest use case for GPUs is number crunching.
Yeah,
that's what it does, and it does number crunching in the non-integer numbers, right? So it does do an awful lot associated with graphics because graphics is typically a non-integer based format for processing. But the biggest thing that they can do is they can push a ton of calculations through a GPU and it offloads off of the CPU.
Yeah. Everything the CPU should not waste its time doing, the GPUs can do. And that just makes for a, we were talking about turboprop planes, man. It's like a turbocharger. It's like having a, you know, four cylinder, six cylinder car, eight cylinder car with a turbocharger. That thing makes a massive difference when it's needed. And in today's workloads, it's needed a lot, whether you realize it or not.
Absolutely.
Bill, general thoughts on this GPU conversation based on what I said, what Todd said, and where it comes up and where it comes up not enough?
Yeah, it doesn't come up enough for sure. And I think a lot of that has had to do with cost and somewhat with cost and somewhat with a lot with just lack of understanding. I mean, today, like to your point, Andy, you buy a laptop, just a generic off the shelf laptop, it's going to have some form of a GPU, whether it's part of the same chip that's running the CPU or not. It's got some graphics some graphics processing capabilities and number crunching, to use Todd's words, capabilities within it. And even things as simple and seemingly benign as a PowerPoint presentation and the transitions you put in those are leveraging GPU-like functionality. So if you're just publishing Office or you're running Office within a VDI workload and you don't have a GPU, Office is probably not going to perform quite as well as it would with the GPU.
It's not going to. I mean, forget about the fact you got latency across the delivery mechanism of however much latency is across that wire that you're connecting from. Right. It's not snappy. It's not as snappy on the back end. It's going back to the turbo idea. It's like if we fast forward 10 years from now, every car is going to be a smaller form factor engine with a turbocharger. And then all of a sudden you show up and just jump into a four cylinder Ford Ranger from 1989. You're like, this thing's a dog.
Yeah. It's like when I went from my six cylinder standard sedan to a four cylinder sedan, I had to press on the gas a whole lot harder to get it to go as fast or as accelerate as quickly. It was a really, you know, a major difference.
Yeah. Hey, Todd, you want to talk about the relationship between Citrix and Intel during all this time?
Yeah. So Citrix and Intel have had a longstanding relationship. Obviously chip manufacturers have a huge influence. Intel was also one of the first that, kind of started putting virtualization into the silicon with the vPro chipsets. And they've also done an awful lot with the graphics, but oftentimes they're overshadowed by some of the other companies out there that focus just on graphics, right? So think of it back in the days of Silicon Graphics and even in modern times with NVIDIA. Intel has a ton of really smart engineers that are building out solutions that are going and interacting directly with the CPU, right? So it made a lot of sense to partner up with Intel and keep maintaining that relationship with Intel.
Yeah.
And be able to continue to co-develop and work on projects together, work on bringing new features to the world.
Yeah, it makes total sense as we move from endpoint computing to delivered computing, so deployed to delivered computing, whether it's like we're going to talk about here in the very beginning, a physical computer delivering across a wire to another physical entity of some type, physical device, or whether it's a virtualized instance running on top of some hypervisor layer or in the cloud potentially. Go ahead, sorry.
And I think, Andy, it also drives towards the intelligence built into the Citrix stack to leverage a graphics card that's on a local endpoint, on the remote endpoint, as much as possible by doing graphics offloads and things like that. But yet when the user goes over to more of a thin client experience that doesn't have the high-end graphics cards on the endpoint, and really kind of adjusting that on the fly and be able to say, you know what, you're still going to get the same experience regardless of what endpoint you're on. And we're going to be smart enough in the back end to put those resources to use wherever they happen to be.
Yeah, the best possible experience, the most efficient way. Yeah. And in this world, potentially the safest way.
Absolutely.
I was listening to Elon Musk's book over the weekend while I was on vacation. And they talked about as people transition from being gearheads on cars to being, when everything became kind of sealed and you couldn't get to stuff the way you used to could, where you couldn't just bolt on new stuff. And now we live in a world, and the same thing happened in the PC world. And that's when we became more software centric, where we got these things like these systems and these system boards and these chipsets. We can't really monkey with those, but we sure can write software and things to make them more efficient and more higher performing, leverage what's inside that box. And that's where, Citrix and Intel, when you listen to the, the pundits talk about it from a financial perspective. Intel, yeah, they talk about hardware stuff and talk about it. And then they talk about the other guys trying to copy that, which they are. But it's the software is where Intel has this massive head start. And then take that and apply it to something like Citrix. Now you've got the two working together.
Yeah.
All right. So this first section talks about Intel Arc and Citrix Remote PC Access. I'll just real quick recap Remote PC for our listeners. Remote PC is when you use Citrix's delivery model and management model to connect to a physical PC, which is going to have a graphics card in it. They always do. But in this case, a very specific graphics card that understands what it's doing from a software and user perspective better. Todd, you want to jump onto this?
Yeah, so Remote PC was this was one of those innovations that the Citrix had years ago. I think it was probably 15 plus years ago that we introduced this. And it was really around customers that had invested in high-end PCs that were sitting in the offices. And how do you access those remote, right? So it was a snow day scenario. Or it was, I need to put the physical device in a secure area and connect to it remotely to be able to access it to verify, you know, what are the results and what are some of the images and things like that I want to be able to view. So the Remote PC was a really great solution for that. Marry that up with the desktop virtualization, the VDI type of solution, and say, well, if that machine's turned off, we can wake it up. We can connect to it. We can have an alternative to connect to it. But then we also can fail over back to a VDI session or a virtual machine-based solution. So it really kind of filled out that entire delivery stack that we had. And it was all managed through the same type of policies and things like that. So there was a ton of benefits towards Remote PC when we first rolled it out. Still to this day, we've still got a lot of good use cases being utilized by customers on a daily basis, leveraging this technology. But once again, it kind of, these were specific built PCs that you didn't want to go and have to virtualize those immediately. Yeah. Right? So there was a lot of benefits there.
And that might have been because they were specialized, or it might have been that's what you had and you weren't ready to replace them with something else that, you know, costs you money again. And, you know, Bill, you probably would agree that during the pandemic, this particular concept took off a lot because necessity.
Absolutely. This was definitely something that was deployed widely during the pandemic. And actually, even before, I can remember a client in my market years ago that they gave everybody laptops because they wanted them to be able to have the availability to work when they were at home or during a downtime event. This was before the pandemic. And a CFO or the CIO walked around one afternoon and noticed how many desks still had the laptops sitting on them. So they decided to migrate to a Remote PC approach. So, you know, another good example of being able to leverage the technology that's sitting on the desk for access remotely.
I'll never forget the guy in charge of disaster planning for Y2K and right thereafter. His plan was to give everybody a laptop, went forward and a VPN connection. And then I walked to his desk every day on my way out. Every day his laptop was sitting in the cradle. It did not go home.
Exactly.
This is insane. So Todd, anything specific around the Intel chipset here as it relates to Remote PC you want to call out?
Yeah, so a lot of it is supporting, you know, everything from H.265 and AV1 support. And it's really the reason why that had to be done is to support a lot of the applications that are leveraging those protocols and those GPU specific initiatives, right? So everything from being able to resolve codec issues to doing the actual translations between, you know, the various graphic entities that are out there. And, you know, a lot of it is based on some of the most popular graphics editing systems that are out there, including Adobe Premiere Pro and, you know, a variety of different Visual Studio type of solutions that are out there. And the software that's being used or the applications that are being used are no longer being sold to very specific users. They're kind of generally available. I mean, think about it. Almost every single content creator on YouTube uses some form of a virtual graphics studio solution that they're learning as they go. They're not having to go through specialized training. They're not having to buy specialized hardware to be able to do this. Yeah. They're basically going to Best Buy and buying a good graphics laptop. Transform that into the business world. And now all of a sudden, you know, you've got the same needs, but it has to be done more on at scale.
Right. And that scale might be all the time, or it might be just periods of time.
Yep.
You don't want to over provision just off, you know, 30 minutes a month. Somebody's going to need this thing.
Yep.
But I think one of the key things here about leveraging remote PC is the fact that, and this kind of goes back to one of the original promises of VDI is keeping all of the IP or the really important data in the data center. So we have a lot of customers that leverage this type of technology, remote PC in particular, where they're really trying to, maybe they have overseas or offshore folks accessing the data, and they want to really strictly control and keep that in the data center. And by, you know, putting this on a PC that only has access to, you know, to what's in the data center and not allow any communication externally, kind of goes back to the promise of VDI, security, centralization, et cetera. So, you know, this certainly benefits it. And then being able to do that for things like these high-end graphics applications really makes it more effective when you start talking about things like designers or content creators, et cetera.
Yeah, and Bill, that's the number one use case I've seen over and over again. They have high-end graphics needs, which we're talking about here with the remote PC, physical PC concept.
Right.
And they have the need for centralized access to data, not only from historically the ability to get work done, but in this day and age, the ability to secure the work.
Yeah. And, you know, some folks would say, well, there's other ways you could do this without, you know, without having to bring the semi-complex architecture to it. But you really can't, because one of the advantages here of doing this via Citrix is the HDX protocol, HDX/ICA protocol, and the ability for that to be able to understand what's going on the endpoint and optimize the delivery of the traffic such that the endpoint can render it in the best possible way and as quickly as possible. So the particularly when you're talking about the Arc Pro here, this is a workstation GPU. So HDX knows how to work with it and handle, like Todd said, the offload of AVI and H265, which makes it far more effective than other methods of connectivity.
Right. So guys, we're going to transition into talking about virtual machines and VDI here. I'm going to read from the blog this particular paragraph, because it's important. If you're listening and you're one of those guys that when someone like me walks in the room and starts talking about GPUs and you start talking about AutoCAD and 3D rendering and that stuff being where this applies, then I'm talking to you, because you're wrong. Because it applies in more places than just that. Here you go. So the benefits of VDI with Intel Flex Data Center GPUs. Traditionally, GPUs were associated with graphics-intensive workloads only. I put the word only in there because a lot of people still think of that only. But the VDI landscape has evolved in recent years. My point would be the last 10 years for sure. Intel Flex Data Center GPUs redefine the role of GPUs in virtual desktop environments, VDI, offering enhanced performance and scalability across a variety of applications. These GPUs support hardware-assisted GPU virtualization using single root IO virtualization, SRIV-IOV, eliminating additional virtualization licensing cost and complexity. Mic drop, if I would drop my mic, I'm not going to. That's important, and everybody needs to consider that for almost every workload. Anything above task worker, and maybe even task worker, needs a GPU sliver at least. Todd, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so it's an interesting change in development here, right? So instead of having to go and say I need to license every single GPU card that I'm going to be using here, whether I'm using it or not, I still need to have a license fee associated with that. That's a significant change. But I think the other piece of it is, you know, going back to the comment you made a couple of minutes ago of if I'm only going to need it for 30 minutes to be able to do a certain task or a certain set of calculations, and then I need to put it back into the library, this is really kind of solving this problem, right? Eliminating the requirement to overspend and over-architect the solution. Here and obviously being able to, you know, better deliver and reduce that total cost is huge nowadays. I think every single customer is looking for what they're spending on for resources that they're using, but more importantly, what are they spending money on that for resources that they never really use? So it's kind of there's more interest in the balance there than in the past.
Bill, comments?
Yeah, I would agree completely. And it's interesting that this is license-free GPU when it comes to, you know, carving them up into the virtual GPUs. This Flex Data Center GPU product from Intel lets you carve them up just like you could do with other vendors into virtual GPUs and assign them to specific desktops. But to Todd's point, you had to assign a license to that, whether it was being used or not. And here it looks like you can just float them without having to worry about having the license tied up. Of course, they also support the high-end codecs, just like we were talking about a few minutes ago. But here you're talking about running these in data center server type equipment where they could be carved up and delivered very similar to the way we've done it with other products in the past.
Yeah, Bill's going to ask you about that licensing concept. So explain that more specifically, what this change is, or...
In the middle of the article, based on what it says Intel's license-free GPU solution for VDI can reduce the total cost of ownership. Todd may understand it better than I do, but at least from what I know, essentially, you're not having to create a license server, as it were, and have that license server hand out a license to each VDI instance. This is just almost like you can run as many vGPUs as the GPU will support. And you don't have to worry about the licensing. So you can carve it up a number of different ways. You're not having to pay extra for the licensing, worry about having a license server track it and those sorts of things. So it simplifies it and presumably would also reduce the cost. Todd, did I catch that right? Or
yep.
That's your understanding?
Yeah. Yeah. You were spot on with that. It really creates a pool of resources that can be utilized right. As needed, as opposed to having to dedicate those, right?
So it's, I think Andy, in the other alternative ways of doing this, you actually have to assign a license to a device, and then if you've got, or maybe a user, I don't remember to be honest with you, but then if you want to add a couple of new devices in order, you got to buy more licenses, or you can just move those licenses from one device from one VM to another, but that's a manual process that is prone to error. So not having that complexity in there, like I said, simplifies it.
Yeah. Yeah. Going back to the original offering in the GPU world, you basically bought a GPU and carved it up for however many, and it was licensed. Oh, I think you actually bought an expensive GPU. There were no licenses. You just bought an expensive.
There weren't initially. No. Yeah. The early days, cause I had one, in a demo server that we had, and you just bought the GPU and you covered up however you wanted as well within the bounds of its capacity, of course, but you didn't have to worry about licensing. And then licensing was added on later in the subsequent generation of GPUs. And of course, here it looks like Intel's going back to that original model.
But if you remember when you first started doing the GPUs, you had to assign the GPUs to a specific pool of resources or a site or a farm. Yeah. And they were forever assigned to there, and you would have to carve them up based on the number of machines in your catalog that were part of that farm.
It's much more fixed than dynamic, and looks like we're moving over towards dynamic, which is a good thing.
Yeah. So, guys, the blog kind of ends with benefits to the customers. Todd, I'll let you jump in and cover this first.
Yeah, so I think the biggest benefit for the customer is it's satisfying the need and reducing those hurdles for adoption or those obstacles that go in front of adoption, which is, you know, everyone wants the high-end graphics use case. Everyone wants the highest performing device. And, you know, the users will sometimes come up with all kinds of reasons why they want to maintain, keep their physical desktop, their high-end desktop or laptop device. But from an organizational perspective, it helps reduce that overall cost, whether it be from the licensing savings, from the hardware resource savings that can be out there. And the big thing is you know, the benefits can be proven, right? So you leverage tools like you know, Login VSI and some of the other solutions that are out there that, that can help provide those case studies, provide the, that empirical information that's really going to show you that, yes, you can save more by doing it this way than if you have to go out and buy a fleet of high-end graphics workstations, as an example.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. And then those get broken, those get stolen, there's security concerns, there's data synchronization concerns.
It's, well, and quite frankly, you know, one of the other challenges with using a laptop with a high-end graphics card is if you've got it sitting on your lap for a while, your your legs start cooking.
Yeah.
So, Bill, take this conversation, but now twist it over towards the knowledge worker and even the task worker and how it applies in the VDI world for benefits.
Yeah, I think when you start looking at the knowledge worker in particular, well, really both of them, it goes back to what I was saying earlier around leveraging standard applications today, and the benefits of having GPUs are going to accelerate the performance of those applications, like, again, like Excel or PowerPoint in particular, because of the math and the calculations that go into rendering and calculating everything in those tools. So certainly there's benefits to customers there. But the key thing about this new generation of GPUs, and it's in the blog article itself, is choice and flexibility. You know, you've got license-free options, you've got all support for all the codecs. All of these things will help improve the experience for the end user, even the task worker and the knowledge worker, particularly when they're leveraging standard office apps that, whether you know it or not, if you've got a standard or relatively recent laptop today, you can look in Task Manager and see the GPU graph, and it actually goes up a lot when you're doing things in basic things in PowerPoint and Excel. So having that capability on the endpoint, I'm sorry, in a VDI environment is key.
And the one we haven't talked about, which I constantly go look at in my world, is just using a browser.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And that's where you're going to see tab after tab after tab, just sucking up the GPU resources, if it has them, which in a physical world, it definitely has them.
You want to talk about key GPU resources? Let's talk about what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Okay. Well, guys, thanks for jumping on and covering this topic. This is a relevant topic, and it will continue to be for as long as the end user compute world exists, I'm sure. We'll keep an eye on it for you guys.
For sure. Thanks, Andy.
All right, guys. Talk to you next week. Thank you.
Bye.